January 17th, 2006.
We're on 164.
For the record.
We're changing things around here a little bit.
Present are Representative Coghill, Representative Harris, Representative McGuire, Representative Berkowitz, Representative Guttenberg. Is that right, David?
Yeah. You got it all right.
I always mess that one up. Welcome to the committee.
What'd you think?
Welcome to the committee.
Yeah,
he's got it right.
Right.
Chairman's got it right.
Representative Rookberg, Chairman. We have a quorum to do business. Representative Corning is out of town. On the agenda today is Senate Bill 164, Salmon Product Tax Credit. And we have a proposed House Committee substitute for adoption. And Chair would entertain a motion to adopt the C version working document. Representative Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the C version for House CS or CS or Senate Bill 164. That's Kane, dated 12-1905.
Any objections?
I object for discussion. The distinction is Section 5.
There's objections to adopting the CS. You're voicing objection, Representative Berkowitz.
Yes. I'd like someone to speak to the distinctions between the S version and the C version.
Okay, with that, we'd ask Senator Stedman to come forward, please, or his able assistance. Oh, I'm sorry. Brief at ease.
We get the wrong version out?
No. Does not everybody have the C version?
Not the.
The record. Everybody has a C version being distributed to the audience. Senator Stedman, sir,
yes,
for the record.
My name is Senator Bert Stedman. I represent District A. And maybe if I could, Mr. Chairman, just before I head into the change for in Section 5, is just kind of go over a little brief history.
Senator Stedman, is that okay, Representative Berkowitz?
Rundown
so we understand.
The final version that we are modifying from is which version? Is it the CS or SB 164, or is there another version?
The C version is the one is the open blank CSB in front of us.
Right, and the one before that, which version is before, since they're not doing it sequentially anymore?
Senator Stedman.
Is it the S version?
Should be the S version, if my memory serves me right.
Okay.
If you don't mind, Representative Berkowitz, if you could defer your actual question and give us a little review so we understand the CS in total.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Spring, when we were all working together, the workloads were pretty high, and in this particular piece of legislation, there wasn't enough room on the docket one evening. So we're back working on it this afternoon. The change to address Representative Berkowitz's question is a actual postdating to the 1st of January due to the lapse. Initially, it was anticipated that this piece of legislation, would have been finished up last May or April or March, sometime back in the spring. But let me just give you a little bit of highlights on the bill itself and what's going on. Several years ago, as we know, the fishing industry, particularly the salmon industry, hit on some really hard economic times with implosions of prices, and that had a multiple impact effect across the state on the ability of one of our major industries to operate. So there was a salmon task force put together to study the issue and come back with recommendations to the legislature to try to help stimulate and turn around our once very viable salmon fishing industry. And this bill came out of that particular task force as one of the recommendations. And what this bill does, it encourages, it's a tax credit bill. And just for the audience that may not be as familiar with tax credits, is expenses, a tax credit, you actually calculate your tax liability and a tax credit, you subtract that right off of your tax liability, so it's much more valuable from the industry side than an expense.
What kind of taxes are they, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Harris.
What kind of taxes are they? Are you talking about like a corporate income tax to the state? Are you talking about raw fish tax? What are you talking about?
This would go against the calculation of the corporate income tax for the state. And it's a 50% tax credit. and it's going to expire, due to expire in December 31st of 2008. And then they have an additional 3 years of carry forward to use it up or lose it. Now, they've had a tax credit in place, and there's been some challenges from the state side in dealing with it, as far as some firms used a fairly aggressive definition of what would qualify, and it wasn't as effective as we'd like. So when we sat down and looked at this particular bill, what we wanted to do was get the abuses out of the current system and target the industry to modernize in a way that they would be better capable of competing against their major worldwide competitors, namely farm fish and other things that we are at a disadvantage to. There was and is no interest in allowing the industry to allow or to have them use or buy used equipment, equipment from subsidiaries or other gaming mechanisms that someone may want to employ to derive this tax credit. What this tax credit is targeted for is value-added enhancement and beyond heading and gutting and freezing. And with that in mind, we also looked at the canning process. Now, the old can lines that we've all known for our entire lives and in my life, was my grandparents' lifetime, virtually has remained unchanged. And there's an interest here to encourage the industry to explore alternatives. A good example is the flip top that you see in a lot of canning done today. So that is definitely targeted into modernizing the canning line. The weight and the direction of this bill, again, is to even encourage more modern product stabilization processes. A good example would be if you want to put salmon in a pouch. And we start to see that quite a bit in the grocery stores now. We see a lot of tuna fish and other things in the vacuum pouches. It's very expensive and labor-intensive. And when you have an industry that from an industry that has a way of handling a product that in normal times has very attractive margins, we need some way to encourage them to evolve away from that and do other processing styles. That's a nice way to say to encourage them to move away from the traditional canning line.
Bert, can you just, because I think the question might have been, what's the reason for the CS? Why do we need to come back here to address the CS?
If we ran this across without the CS, there would have been a gap in the dates. So this CS would have an effective date of January 1 of 06, which backs us up, several weeks. It just closes the gap, so there's a smooth transition from the old bill or the old tax credit scenario into the new one. There is some interest and some discussion of a date extension beyond 2008. I personally don't support that. I think by having the in-service date end December 31st of 2008, and then allowing the carry forward for 3 years for unused tax credits gives the legislature and the rest of the state an ability to come back in, take a look at this industry, and see how this industry is on a competitive basis worldwide and on a regional basis, and ask us ourselves very simple questions like, should we try to stimulate this industry in this direction, to this magnitude? And clearly, if there's an interest by the state to do that, then we should review it. But that remains to be seen. The other point I'd like to make to not extend the date is it encourages the processors to upgrade their equipment sooner versus later, which hopefully is going to have an impact on the dockside prices they pay their fishermen, which will allow for higher values to the fishing fleet. So not only are we trying to set up a process to encourage and stimulate the processing industry which would allow them to expand their margins, but we want those margins not to be held by the processors, but to ripple through the rest of the industry and to help the entire coastal Alaska, which has been, as we all know, devastated. And it's just been the last year and a half that we've seen, or 2 years that we've seen the industry start to rebound.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McGuire.
Senator Stedman, am I understanding this correctly, that the tax credit could be applied to three subsequent years so that you could actually be engaging in the activity that we want to promote in 1 year and not applying the tax credit for that year, but waiting then for another couple years when you may not be engaging in that activity and apply it? Or am I looking at it wrong?
Well, I think how we'd see this tax credit used is when they purchase the equipment.
Okay.
That half of that purchase cost of the new equipment, they would want to apply that against their taxes as soon as possible to use it up. The tax credit is more valuable with the time value of money used today versus tomorrow.
Right.
The reason that there's this cutoff date of 08 and allowed a carry forward to 012 is if they have a lot of capital improvements being done. They mean, and we've got a 50% limit on what they can use against their corporate taxes. Mm-hmm. That they can carry that forward and not lose it, and the state then minimizes the or not minimizes, but in guarantees that they'll give up no more than 50% of their corporate taxes in any given year, because this clearly is an incentive program for the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tax credits are used. Is a very targeted method.
So just as you said, a company may want to go forward and make all of their capital improvements at the same time, but recognizing that they're only going to get 50%, they may want to space out how they apply that. So in year one, they do the max, year two and year three, and spread it out so that they get the maximum benefit.
Correct. Sort of. I think what you'd find that they would, you know, they've got their capital budgeting to deal with, as far as how much that they can, and each individual company is different, how much that they want to spend on capital improvements, and then there's some lead time, and then there's also, you know, design and manufacturing. A lot of this equipment has to be built. So when they purchase that equipment, and whatever tax year that's in, then they're going to want to use as much of that tax credit that year as absolutely possible. And then the previous year, whatever's left, use it up. But I think the issue of the time frame of 3 years, it takes a while for the capital budgeting process to go through with the companies to decide if they want, say, if they're going to do a pouch product in a particular processing plant. And, you know, it takes a while to make that decision and then to order that equipment and you know, get it paid for.
Sure.
Or try to put away the capital necessary.
And Mr. Chairman, just the reason I'm belaboring is this is very unusual. I mean, I would love to have the ability to give X amount to charity in 1 year, but the next year I may earn more and I may want to go ahead and hold off that deduction for that next year when I could utilize it better, but the tax laws don't work that way on the federal level. You've got to apply it in the year in which you use it or lose it, if you will. And so, or medical expenses, for example, I may have a year where I incur more, but I'd like to hold off on applying that. And so this is a little bit unusual, and I'm just trying to understand the rationale.
It's a little unusual if you look at it just like on expenses, but if you look at the way tax credits work, would not be in the best interest of the state is to give them like a 100% tax credit.
Right.
So if they spent $100,000 on capital improvements and they had $100,000 net income, they'd pay no corporate income tax.
Right.
You know, and I think for a as an economic policy, we'd want to encourage them to upgrade and modernize and be competitive, but we don't want to give up our revenue source and have gaming going on.
Right.
Representative Berkowitz.
Yeah. Two questions.
Full circle here. Right?
Yeah. It goes around, comes around.
It's our first committee meeting, Mr. President. We're excited.
The S version.
How with you?
Just on my quick read, differs substantively in two ways. Section 4, which is adding 4375035I6, deletes a section that talks about canned salmon product that is canned, except for salmon products in a pop-top can. And then Section 6, they talk about availability of credit for conversion to pop-top can production. And is there a reason why those sections were taken out in the... C version?
If I, Chairman, if I could have a quick minute.
Brief at ease. Senator Stemmer.
Representative Berkowitz's question. There's been some renumbering. The change in the bill is just a backdating to January 1. So there's been no. The essence of the bill hasn't been changed, just the renumbering of the sections.
Wait a minute. Let me just follow up then. You're saying deletion of Section 4 of the S version is ministerial? It looks as if you're looking at the S version, line 11, subsection C, has been added into to Section 3 on page 2 of C version. So... was there a reason it was there in the first place? I guess that's what you're asking.
Seems like there's a drafting question for Ledge Legal.
Right.
But as is removal of the uncodified section in Section 6. I also have a question about the triggering that's in Section 4.
Redundant.
I mean, you have an effective date that's either January 1, 2012, or the date of a notification about a court case. Is there a pending case on those statutes?
The first part, the termination date's 2012. As far as, you know, you've got till that date to lose the credit. Now the next sentence. Refers to my understanding. It refers to if there's a violation of the Commerce Clause.
It's like a severability.
And the Section B is dealing with if it violates the Commerce Clause in the United States Constitution. To me, it's just check language.
But I've never seen that kind of severability. I mean, there's straight severability that can be written into a statute.
Well, there's a sunset date. That's why it has to be that way.
Well, you can make it. I mean, normally you would say, or determination by a court that it's unconstitutional. I mean, there's a specification here that it's solely unconstitutional according to the Commerce Clause. I hadn't seen anything like that, and that's why I asked. Is there a court case about this? Or is there an anticipation that this is violative of the Commerce Clause?
No, not that I'm aware of as far as any violation there. This is basically an extension of current tax credit in place today with more stringent language as far as what the processors private sector can do to secure that tax credit.
Representative McGuire.
Yeah, through the speaker, the concern is the reference, in my opinion, the concern is the reference to those products produced out of the state. So in Section 3, you're saying canned except for salmon products in a pop top. That could be pop top products that are produced in Alaska or produced in Idaho or produced wherever. So you have no violation of the Commerce Clause. But when you get to Section D, you're making a distinction between those products produced out of the state and those in the state. And that's traditionally can be viewed as a violation of the Commerce Clause. Because that's the only basis on which you're distinguishing.
The Senator, well, you weren't the original author of this legislation, were you?
No, I'm not an attorney.
No, you weren't the original bill sponsor, though, were you?
Last year.
Not last year, when this bill was first enacted. When it was AS 4370.
Oh, no. Yeah. Back in the day, the current one, no.
That came out of the Salmon Task Force or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Representative Berkowitz.
Yeah, I mean, the way I read that severability clause, because it refers to Section 1. Section 1 is just a simple extension of until 2008 as opposed to 2005. It doesn't specify which subsection.
It does say Section
1. I don't know. You have a statute in front of me. I don't have the statute.
Well, what we see in Section 4 in the C version, it says, this act, Section 3 takes effect on the earlier date, 2012, or else when there's notification that there's been a final judgment.
Right.
The part affecting by Section 1 of this Act. And Section 1 of this Act is an extension of property placed into service after December 31st, 2008. I understand what Representative McGuire is saying, that would make the most sense if you're talking about out-of-state investments, but that's not what it says.
Mm, right.
Well, what's in Section 1 of the Act?
That's the whole thing. That's the tax credit.
It's 035 and 036. Was that the original bill?
035 and 036 is 035 is the salmon product development tax credit, and 036 is the salmon utilization tax credit.
Okay.
But the modifications to 035B contained in Section 1 of the C version is extends B subsection B2. Is extended to December 31st, 2008, from December 31st, 2005.
Right.
Right, but if you go back to the section, someone's going to need to draw a diagram on this, but
right.
But Section 4 talks about Section 3 of the C version, which is the value-added product section, takes effect either 2012 or after there's some notification of final judgment. So
that's not entirely true, because Section 4 speaks to Section 7, which is Section 3 of Section 7, then goes back to Section 4.
Whatever sections, it just doesn't add up.
I think it's eminently clear to me. Senator Stedman, could you help clarify this?
Yeah, my trusty aide will help clarify.
Oh, that's great. All the help we can get. Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kim Carno, staff to Senator Stedman. When I spoke to the drafter actually about this section earlier today, what he indicated to me is that although the language in Section 4 of the work draft mentions a Section 3 and a Section 1, that is actually a reference to the existing statute, not the Section 1 and Section 3 in the work draft before you. So when you look back at the existing law, what it talks about in that section is the 3-year carry forward period.
Oh.
What's the citation on that?
I'm sorry. It's 4375035D.
D. D.
Yeah, there's no D.
Well, that's why Ethan's hogging the statutes down here, and you can't read this.
I'm sharing it with the speaker. An unused credit under this section may be carried forward and applied against the tax.
You got it taken care of, Norm.
That's why I'm relying on our legal brains here, right?
That's it. But it doesn't say D.
Senator Stedman, of the new work draft, the 2012 date is of the carry forwards. I was just to clarify my own.
That's
right. So there's the 08 in-service sunset date, or in-service date, and the '12 is the termination of the program date.
Right, correct.
So let me understand, I want to go back to the gaming issue while these guys are sorting that out, so I have it in my own mind, is that the 50% max is against the initial investment, but can you have a, you got an installment sales contract or the incidence of payments over a series of years? Does that have anything to do with your tax credit? Or is it 50% of the total amount of the piece of equipment? In other words, can you get more than 50% if you game it up, or how, give me an example of gaming.
Gaming is, what I referenced there, is equipment that doesn't really do value-added enhancement. It could, you know, be other things within the industry, or rebuilding older machinery rather than new machinery.
So that's why you put the canning except for the pop tops, is that right?
Right.
That was why you would avoid the gaming of that one?
Right, avoid the gaming.
Or you did mention the fact that you could have a subsidiary buy some equipment and start a new depreciation schedule and then requalify or qualify for a tax credit?
Exactly.
Is that prohibited in here?
Yes, that's what I meant by the gaming portion of it.
Right, where is that? Is that the section two language where you enumerate what's not included?
Correct, and then also what is included.
Okay.
The concern there was whenever you do these tax incentives or development incentives, that a particular company, and a lot of companies have subsidiaries out of state, that they don't buy used equipment from a subsidiary that they owned, brought it up to Alaska, and then wanted a tax credit on it. We want new equipment brought into the organization.
So if you buy used equipment, that wouldn't qualify? Is that what your testimony is? What about a zip-top can used?
If you're not going to be able to buy you're going to have a hard time buying new stuff. You're not going to be able to buy equipment from your subsidiaries and use this tax credit.
Well, that's good. I mean, that should be prohibited. Okay, but
we're just trying to make it as unabusive as possible and targeted to get value-added product.
So if in 06 this applies, I buy something this year, and I have, 6 years to take the 50% write-down? Is that what the effective date is, or how is this extension of the carry-forward, how does that work?
Well, if you bought it in 06, you'd take tax credit as much as you can against the 06 income, and then against the 07, 08.
Wait, let's say I lost money in 06. Could I carry it forward?
You'd want to carry it forward.
So the carry 50% is all you get on a particular piece of equipment, notwithstanding sales, installment sales, any financing methods or anything else. But if you don't have any income to write it off again, you can carry it forward. That's right. The intention of the 012 date, right? Or unless there's a finding that there's a constitutionality issue.
Right.
That's where the Section 4 language goes.
Yeah, but we want to be careful. The 50% is on your corporate income tax. So you can't erase your corporate income tax to zero with tax credits.
Okay, so it's 50% of your corporate income tax liability.
Right.
So that's why you want to carry it forward.
Right, so you can allow them to use it
up. Your goal as an operator is to minimize that anyway.
Right.
And this is just an extra incentive. Right.
And our goal is to maximize that tax revenue through expansion of the company. And they have to be placed into service. Right.
Representative Guttenberg. I'm sorry, were you finished, Senator, with that answer?
Just a second. Can we have an at ease for a minute?
Sure, at ease. Senator Stebbins.
Mr. Chairman, I have a clarification because, you know, when this was being put together, we had a lot of discussion over new equipment, used equipment, potential gaming, and the words that were selected were on line 10 on page 1 is first, you know, to be claimed property first placed into service. So you're talking about, you know,
new equipment.
New equipment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Representative Guttenberg, yeah.
Senator?
Yes.
Through the chair.
Through the chair, of course.
New member.
This program's been in place for a while, so, and we're about to extend it out. We've been giving tax credits for a while. It looks like we're getting ready to give a substantial amount looking into the future. What's the history of enhancing the state's position in this? When we enhance the product, is there any, by enhancing the total salmon fisheries across the board, is by enhancing the product, is there any return to the state? Is that any greater?
That's a good question.
I don't have the numerics in front of me, but without that as backup, let me just say that if we just look at the most recent downturn in the salmon industry over the last several years, and we look at the industry turning around here the last couple, you know, we could measure from many, many angles. There's always the corporate income tax collected is just, you know, one measurement. But if you look at the ex-vessel value of the product and the value of the permits in place, or the value of the insurance in place, or the vessels themselves, or the men employed, I think it's pretty clear that the work that the Salmon Task Force has done, and the legislation that's come out to help that industry has been a definite positive in enhancing it, meaning making the overall value of the fisheries greater than it would otherwise normally be. In this particular case, using a tax credit to try to stimulate capital investment in a particular channel, that is why the in-service date ending December 31st of 2008, I think, is in the best interest of the state versus having something that runs indefinitely. So we can, from time to time, come back and look at this to see the state of the industry, and then as a policy matter, should the legislature try to stimulate it in one direction or the other, or just stay out of it?
Chairman.
I represent Harris.
Just briefly, you know, I'm in support of this bill. I was in support of it when it passed before. I think I understand what Senator Stedman's trying to do here. And but you know, the whole idea was to get some new investment into some antiquated equipment that was being used by processors throughout the state, and to give them being the processors, some incentive to do this because the industry was kind of lagging, and it was a hope to modernize a number of the processing plants around the state, and I think it may have done that, or at least it's beginning to do that, and to extend it out and give them a little bit more time to do that, I think is very beneficial to this industry. And if we have other industries in the state who need that, I suppose. But, you know, the fisheries is kind of a unique industry. Commercial fisheries is kind of a unique industry to the state. And so I think it's well worth it, and I support the bill, and I hope we move on here pretty quick.
I agree, Mr. Speaker. Any further comments? I can, for the record, it appears that the documentation provided by the committee indicates that fundamentally the entire sections of 4370, 035, and 036 are included in section one of the bill that we're amending before us. And its original form, which was, I don't know, don't have the house, but whatever. And the language regarding the legal effect of the section 4, I believe, yeah, section 4 language in the committee substitute before us is, as I assume, the analysis by the judiciary chair about the why there was a section 1 specific date and section 2 a constitutional severability situation. That's how I read it. Pretty simple. Whether that was good draft or not remains to be just an argument for another venue.
You want to take it to the floor?
That's great. You want to take it outside?
To the fifth floor. Right, anyway, whatever. And
Mr. Chair, I'd lift my objection.
Right, and the other language was, I think, the original, the section 4 of the S version was deleted for redundancy, which is pretty clear. Representative McGuire.
And I would just, through the chair, Senator Stedman, to the extent that you have the time or energy, I would just query the drafter about whether or not there isn't better severability language. You know, to me, I feel our statute should be readable and easily understandable. And if we're sitting here as a committee struggling over it, it's not your fault, but an average member of the public certainly couldn't be expected to pick this up and understand it. So just a thought would be, if there's something simple, I'd be happy to offer it on the floor as technical language to clarify it. I just make that offer to you to think about. And then just one final question. I don't want to open a can of worms, but just something that I also thought of.
Can of fish.
A can of fish. Not a pop-top can, another type of can or another type of pouch. In Chapter 57 as it exists right now, so I'm looking at page 2 of the handout that we just got from Janet, subsection F there, Representative Coghill and I were just looking at it. So clearly you don't want to extend a tax credit to somebody who hasn't been living up to their obligations. So if they're in arrears, then we say you don't have the opportunity for the tax credit. That makes sense. Then below it, we say that for purposes of the subsection, a taxpayer is not in arrears if the liability for the assessment, contribution, or tax is under administrative or judicial appeal. I do understand that to an extent, but a question you may or may not know or could get back to me on is, what happens if the final ruling goes against the taxpayer? Do we do anything as a state to get that back, that tax credit? So they wouldn't otherwise be qualified. They're under an appeal. The appeal goes against them. So we find out they, in fact, were in arrears. And yet we've extended this tax credit to this individual.
Let me back up a little bit on the
Senator Stedman, briefly.
Okay, yes, Mr. Chairman. I think there was a new drafter involved in this, and so it's good to have attorneys in the legislature. So when we're in this discussion, that you know, there's a check and balance, and clearly there's two on this committee. So that's very helpful. The other point of how to deal with these tax credits, most of the companies, if not all of them, are in contact with the tax division of the state, making sure that their heavy capital investments will qualify. And if for some reason someone decides that they're going to go ahead and make an expense and put it down as a tax credit and file it away and is ruled that it doesn't qualify, well, we get a bill plus interest.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd just, send them a bill.
Okay, with your name on it.
No. Whoever's the Commissioner of Revenue.
Mr. Chair, one question.
Representative Berkowitz.
Because I thought Representative Guttenberg raised an interesting point. This statute's been in effect for a couple of years, and I think it'd be very helpful for the debate on the floor if we could have some information as how often it's been used and what the benefits as well as the costs have been to the state. And I'd appreciate if your office could put that together.
Yes, I can do that, Mr. Chairman.
There's a representative of Department of Revenue here. Scott and Jen, did you want to testify or just ask a question? Sure, come on.
Be careful. It's on a fast track now.
I hear you.
For the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Cotton. Jim, I'm the manager of the Fish Tax Unit with the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. Just a couple of quick clarifications. One, this is a credit against the raw fish tax. It's not against the corporate income tax. So there would not be an instance where they wouldn't have income to offset it against. If they were processing, there would be income in which to tax to apply the credit on.
So you're telling me then that it's against the raw fish tax, not against their corporate income tax?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Harris. Hmm.
So they could accrue it and carry it forward if they weren't fishing. If the prices were low, they wanted to spend the summer in Puerto Vallarte. No, that's not a good place there. Someplace, anyway, in Iceland. How's that, right? They could carry it forward, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, Puerto Vallarta is too hot in the summer.
Reykjavik in Iceland.
Yeah, right. Much better.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may also clarify a question, I think it was from Representative McGuire.
Please.
By definition, arrearage doesn't occur until after their appeal rights have lapsed. Okay. So in an instance where they've appealed something, we don't consider it to be in arrears even if they don't prevail. It's only when the decision is rendered and they don't pay within the time allotted does it become an arrearage.
So appeal it. Get your tax credit, and you'll still be okay.
Through the chair, Representative McGuire, that could happen, but most of the time the appeals are legitimate appeals. Most of the time an appeal is filed because we've issued an assessment, and they have a legitimate reason for appealing it. It's not like an instance where someone has filed a tax return, said that they owed us $100,000, and didn't pay the $100,000. That they can't appeal. If they don't pay the $100,000, it immediately goes to collection. We consider it to be in arrears. So it's the instance where we've made an adjustment to a return, and we need to give them their due process.
Mr. Conjim, looking at the fiscal note, your estimate for 07 is only $100,000 loss or change of revenue. How is that reflective, going back to the question raised by Representative Guttenberg and Berkowitz as to impacts in, let's say, 04 and 05?
Mr. Chair, we weren't certain at the time that this bill was first passed what the effect on the general fund would be. We've estimated since then that the total credit that would be claimed would be approximately $1.5 million each year. The impact of this CS for those first 2 years, the $100,000 you're seeing, we think is an estimate of what effect the pop-top can provision will have on our revenues.
Mr. Chair, just follow up.
Representative Berkowitz.
So in 04 and 05, there was $1.5 million of credit taken, or was there a different amount?
Through the chair, Representative Berkowitz, we estimated that in the original bill, it was not included in the fiscal note to my knowledge, but we've since learned that it's approximately $1.5 million. Each year in those first 2 years is about right.
And those years were...
I'm sorry, maybe I'm just, it's me being a little dense here. That was your initial estimate was $1.5 million a year, but that's actually what it's proven to be?
Through the chair, Representative Berkowitz, yes. Okay. We're seeing that as of today, we think $1.5 million is about right.
And that's for what fiscal years, 05?
That would be fiscal years 04 and 05.
And you're not, of course, you don't know what 06 is. Yeah, okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, then the reality is there's approximately $3 million worth of investing going on, tax that's available for this tax credit in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Harris, at least because of the carryover provision, they're going to be limited to 50% of their tax as well as 50% of their expenditure.
I thought it was expiring, so they probably spent more in 06.
And how much then... See if I could. How much would that be in comparison to what the rates were prior to 04 and 05? In other words, did this incentive make a difference?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, Representative Berkowitz, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I mean, we're sort of estimating that there's about $3 million of capital improvements that took place in these last 2 years, each of the last 2 years. And I'm curious if there's an estimate what it was in the preceding 2 years.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Berkowitz, the Department of Revenue, we have no way of knowing that because this information that we have is specifically related to the credits for the raw fish tax.
Mm-hmm. Probably at this time there's no empirical evidence, but I mean, I'm sure there's field evidence from the companies.
Probably the companies
or the fishermen.
The companies wouldn't ask for this help if they were already investing.
Mr. Chairman, on raw fish tax, there was a lot of raw fish, but it wasn't worth a whole lot just 2 years ago.
I want the legislature to get in the habit of asking.
No, that's
before we get away, before we start making giveaways.
Formal comments from by Representative Coghill, followed by Representative Berkowitz, for the record. Further questions?
We digress.
Is there any further questions of Mr. Coghill? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anybody else wish to testify?
On Senate Bill 164, seeing none, Representative Harris.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we move from committee, if I can find the right bill here. Caught me off guard, I was expecting
Well, you were begging for it.
Yeah, here you go. Let's see, House CS for CS for Senate Bill 164, the slash C. Kane 121905 version from committee with individual recommendations and whatever fiscal note we have.
There is a fiscal note attached. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. The committee is adjourned at 4:53, and stick around to sign the book, please.